Welcome to the ASR Show of Entrepreneurship and Regional Development Podcast. Each publication in our journal is a great opportunity to share significant and audacious contributions to a large audience. My guest today is Luca Castellanza from Maynooth University in Ireland. He recently published an article entitled Types, Determinants, and Outcomes of Entrepreneurial Behaviors During Crisis. He co-authored this paper with Michael Woywood. He recently published this article in Entrepreneurship and Regional Development, a journal edited by Taylor & Francis. They published this article in Entrepreneurship and Regional Development, a journal edited by Taylor & Francis. Luca, welcome to our podcast.
Now, the origin of this paper is the civil war in Cameroon, pretty much. And the setup of this paper is a quite typical grounded theory setup, where you have some unique theoretical problems that have not been addressed, or that there are not really any other method to address them. So it's really this heavy theory building paper set in the context of the Ambazonian War of Independence. And the whole idea is that typically we talk a lot about entrepreneurship and crisis. And we talk a lot about entrepreneurship and poverty, or entrepreneurship and resilience. And you know, we look a lot at how poor entrepreneurs can run a business, how they can compete against maybe richer counterparts. We also look at how entrepreneurs are affected by crisis, either poor entrepreneurs or rich entrepreneurs, right? But we don't really look at those two things together. And therefore, I just had the opportunity, so to say, to study crisis and poverty happening in the same setting. Yeah, because I did some previous studies in Cameroon. I happened to be there in 2018 for a different article that I published in Journal of Business Venturing. And while I was there in 2018, that was when the crisis was starting. So pretty much the civil war, there's not much talk about in the media, actually, is the third largest conflict in Africa today, but it's very not covered in Western media. But the civil war was just starting. In 2018, it was just reaching the city where I was staying. And I had this unique opportunity to have some semi-longitudinal study before and after the war. So that's how the idea came about. And I just happened to be there in the middle of the fire. So I was there as the tension was escalating in 2018. And then I said, well, fantastic. I was already in a war zone. And I was already used to it. I survived. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. Why not get back again in 2020 for a second article? And that's how the idea came about at the end of the day.
What are the main contributions of your paper?
I think the paper is rather unique in the sense that, as I told you, this is more or less pure theory building paper. And what is unique about this paper is that fundamentally it revolutionizes the way academics look at poverty and crisis. Yeah. Because when you look at the poverty literature, there are a lot of misconceptions and a lot of, you know, forcing theories and concepts that are often decontextualized and don't take into account of the reality of living in poverty. And a lot of this you see that, for instance, things like, you know, opportunity theory or things like institutional theory, right? All those theories that are developed in Western context with a focus on Western institutions and Western regulations, they don't really apply that much to entrepreneurs living in poverty. Or when an entrepreneur is there and is living in extreme poverty, when they're living with less than $2 a day, and then a crisis strikes, and the civil war came, and the rebels, the secessionists come around your house and they start shooting you, or they start destroying your farm and destroying your business property, you don't think of institutions. You don't think of opportunity. You think of surviving, right? So it's really the major contribution of this paper is dismantling and distracting all the misconceptions that we Western academic scholars have about doing business in Africa or doing business in those settings characterized by extreme adversity that is life-threatening.
What was for you the main theoretical or maybe methodological challenge or challenges in addressing such a question?
Now, there were quite a few challenges. First of all, a methodological challenge is, well, as I mentioned, this study is pretty much impossible to plan in advance. So unless you are lucky and unless you find yourself in a region or in a city where a civil war is starting, then you cannot predict typically in advance that a civil war is going to come. Or typically it won't be as crazy to say, I want to go and do research in a civil war context, right? So this was somehow, I was lucky from the methodological perspective. And then I also had, you know, some little more challenges later on, let's say, in, for instance, dealing with the data. So dealing with data was happening is that, as it is typical in qualitative research, you don't really have a template. Or, I mean, you have some template, you have some grounded theory templates, or you have some manuals and instructions, but then those instructions, they never apply to your data. So the moment when you do grounded theory, and then you start adding in, you know, things like process theorizing, things like data that is longitudinal up to a certain point because a lot of people had died, or a lot of people became refugees in between the civil war and the and when I collected the data. So eventually it was longitudinal up to a certain extent. Then there were a lot of also ontological problems. So what I was doing was grounded theory with a critical realist perspective, which is not done that much in research. So grounded theory typically is just interpretive, right? And you find that interpretive grounded theory didn't fit with the data, with the reality of what the things I was observing. So even from the methodological viewpoint, this was really a pioneering article in terms of methodological innovations and methodological design, yeah? And yeah, I think another challenge also was that when I look at the data, you know, as I said, there are a lot of misconceptions. There are a lot of ideas that poor entrepreneurs, you know, they do a lot of bricolage, they do a lot of improvisation, and they stretch the resources thin and are always able to make it at the end of the day. But what I found is that this is just a misconception. So I didn't know this in advance, right? I just saw, hey, this is super interesting, let's do this. But when I went and looked at the data, I found that most entrepreneurs are not entrepreneurial, if that makes any sense to you, in the sense that most entrepreneurs really are only struggling to survive in those settings. I have maybe more than half of my sample who are just, you know, shutting down the business or cutting down the operations or trying to minimize cost in some way that helps them stay afloat without really exploiting opportunities or without really having a real return from their investment in the business, right? And when I was doing this, you know, it's, first of all, that's what I was expecting. It's a bit hard to write a paper about non-entrepreneurship or about where we have most of the samples that are not being entrepreneurial. It's a bit hard to craft a story around it, first of all. And second, it's also hard on you and research, like physically and emotionally, because you are there doing research and you're there interviewing 100, 200 people. And you're there all the time. You know, this is, when I started this project, I thought it was about entrepreneurship. At the end of the day, now I think it's more about, you know, human behavior. It's more about sociology more than entrepreneurship at the end of the day. Because what you see is that a lot of those stories and a lot of those narratives, those entrepreneurs whom I talked to, it was more about surviving than about running a business. So this was all something that came up in the process of doing the research that I wasn't expecting early on. And that was very challenging, both personally and methodologically, yeah.
During your research journey, what was your biggest surprise or maybe the most counterintuitive result?
That's one thing. So the fact that this is about survival more than entrepreneurship. That's the most surprising result that was really what disrupted my research pipeline pretty much, yeah. And then something else, so also other findings. So you see that more than half of entrepreneurs are non-entrepreneurs. And what you see is that another surprising finding, right, there's this discussion about necessity entrepreneurship. Well, typically we have this dichotomy in entrepreneurship research where you're either an opportunity entrepreneur where you see an opportunity in the market, you see possibility to make a profit and you go and open a business, or necessity entrepreneur where you're forced into doing a business. Which is a very simplistic dichotomy. It doesn't really apply to Africa or to any setting where they really live in necessity, because necessity entrepreneurship is more like a continuum and it's more like those two things really overlap. So it's not that some entrepreneurs are fully in necessity and some are fully in opportunity mindset. It's always a mixture of the two. And you see it a lot in my findings. So in among my entrepreneurs I interviewed, what I saw is that for some entrepreneurs, the moment when they were struggling, or the moments when they were, you know, what happens that, you know, they were maybe behaving non-entrepreneurial, they were maybe just cutting down their business. When they did that, they were having, obviously, they were not being effective. They were having a lot of vicious circles of losses. And after that, after these vicious cycles just got to ground bottom and just got to the bare minimum that they could afford to live. So you found people maybe that they were living with 10 refugees in their house on a salary of 10 euro a week, right? So you find those desperate situations and you find that desperation or extreme necessity spurs opportunity. That's the controversial, if you want to put it, and second most notable finding of my research. So while we see that typically necessity and opportunity are separate, in my case, once people hit rock bottom and once those entrepreneurs become so desperate, then they start exploring opportunities again, or they start frenzying. That's the code we use in the manuscript. Right? They start frenzying, which means that they do anything to stay afloat. They do, you know, any sort of improvisation, any sort of dangerous activities even. You find entrepreneurs who just move back and forth from the war zone to their relatively safer city, or relatively safer refugee town, refugee house, yeah? And they keep commuting from the war zone back and forth just to trade with people who are not in the war zone, or just to source maybe something from the farms in the war zone. So all those sort of dangerous business models, it's quite an intriguing finding, I would say. It's something that challenges the way we see necessity and opportunity entrepreneurship from a Western perspective, which is completely inappropriate and decontextualized for looking at Africa.
What are the main implications of your work for entrepreneurs, managers, policymakers, practitioners in general?
I think that this work typically doesn't have that many implications for entrepreneurs themselves, right? So if you're an entrepreneur and you're there in poverty, you won't even read this research. Maybe you don't even know how to read, because we're talking about entrepreneurs. Many of them are even illiterate, okay? So they won't be reading the article. But I think that really this is quite important, first of all, for academics, so academics can learn a lot from this research. And secondly, for policymakers. Because if you're a policymaker, or if you're a charity, you know, we talk about the war in common, but this applies to pretty much all sorts of war or all sorts of crises. So typically, it's not even just about the Amazonian civil war. It's about the Amazonian civil war. It's about COVID-19. And the idea is to have some insights that are generalizable to different types of crises. And once we're dealing with crises in settings that are already affected by poverty or already affected by some sort of temporary adversity that is hampering entrepreneurs' activities, have some plan of action. You need to know how to prioritize your resources. Or you need to even know when you, let's say, invest resources in training entrepreneurs or invest resources in recovering after a civil war, then you want to know, how do I invest these resources? What is the best way for me to get those resources to my beneficiaries, to my entrepreneur, to the informal charities, to the people to whom I'm giving money? What's the best way to rebuild after a civil war? What's the best way to help people who are living in poverty, who are maybe facing some personal crisis? Yeah? So it's not just crisis affect a region. It can be crisis like your husband dies and then you remain like a single business owner, maybe. Or it could be anything like you cannot pay school fees and then you have to get into debt to pay school fees. So crisis has multiple levels. And these kinds of crises can really help, first of all, training entrepreneurs or training business owners and beneficiaries of those aid programs or who receive funding from donors and charity organizations, and help them be more efficient in how they spend this funding. Help them shift from a focus on preserving resources or, let's say, minimizing losses, which doesn't really work, to a focus more centered around investing and more centered around a medium to long-term perspective on growing the business. So teaching them to business plan under adversity and teaching them to devise long-term measures against crisis. That's pretty much what the paper can help with. And secondly, also in terms of prioritizing your beneficiaries, because what we found is that typically, you know, we found three different types of beneficiaries in two different types of entrepreneurs. One that is not resourceful, the vast majority of them. The other one, which we labeled hustling resourcefulness. So this idea of resourcefulness as a hustle and a hustle, a resourcefulness as a desperate attempt to improve your business, pretty much, yeah? And the third category was what we named future-oriented resourcefulness or long-term resourcefulness, with the idea that those type of entrepreneurs, maybe they have some strong resource basis. Maybe they weren't affected as much by the crisis that much. Or maybe, let's say, they And the crisis brought them some opportunity. Maybe they were working on internet services, and then from internet services, you know, during COVID, during the civil war, they had more customers. So something like that. Pretty much for some interpreters, the crisis was a boon. So the crisis was a good thing for them, for a very limited subset of them. And what we found that eventually, when you have public resources, and when you have to invest in a crisis-affected area, whether a civil war or COVID-19, personal crisis, climate change crisis, or you name it, right? You want to really target those people who are struggling. So those people who, you know, the more desperate the situation is, the easier it will be for them to enter an entrepreneurial mindset. And this can be quite important in tailoring aid for poor and crisis-affected entrepreneurs.
Thanks a lot, Luca, for participating to our show and presenting your paper entitled Types, Determinants, and Outcomes of Entrepreneurial Behaviors During Crisis. All our podcasts are available on entrepreneurship-edu.com and on the main podcast platforms.